She would like to ask about mind, because she heard that mind has this quality, and she feels that mind has this quality, that everything, it's everything good that is happening, is starting to think that, oh, it's because of me. So, and we know that transcendental knowledge is descending, it's coming from above, but immediately mind starts to think that, oh, it's because of I'm so good, it's coming to me. And for me, for some reason, I made something good, so it's coming to me, it's because of me. And like this, you can be a big, you can become a victim of ego, and you become proud of yourself. So what can we do to avoid that?
Yes, because that is the more appropriate word than mind is ego. So in Gita, the famous sloka, is it seven? Ahamkar vimudatma karta ham iti manyate. That ahankar, ego, takes credit for what is being done. But it says, karanam guna sango asya sadasajani janmaso. I might be confusing them, but similar. Think, really, this is our acquired tendency, an acquired nature. It's not our permanent nature of the servitor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example in the Jiva Dharma, where he's discussing what? Jiva Dharma. What is the constant, sustainable, actual position of the jiva soul? To help us understand that in relation to, or distinguished from, acquired nature, an example is given about water and ice. So, and it's a very good example, because it's simple and easy to understand and profound at the same time. So when you have ice, an ice cube, you can talk about how hard it is, how cold it is, all these acquired attributes in describing it, and they seem to be very accurate. Right? I mean, they're relatively speaking, they are a realistic assessment of what is observable. Right? But it's not water in its natural condition. That's why it's very interesting that when people, whether they're scientists, sociologists, psychologists, they analyze human nature, and it seems to be accurate and profound and have some relevance or even point to some sort of remedy. But it's all dealing with acquired nature. It's water in that frozen state. So they're observing all these qualities, characteristics, etc., of it in that unnatural condition, or in, for the sake of this talk, a dharmic position. But when it melts and comes back to its natural liquid state, which interestingly, just by word association and comparison, what's another meaning, you know, word for liquid is ras. When it comes back to this condition, then all of those acquired characteristics vanish. They're no longer significant because it's now in its normal state. So what is our normal condition? We're trying to find out. Sometimes Guru Maharaj would give this example of what do you call a sanitarium? You know, an insane asylum in Russian?
That's in Clinton.
What's it called in Russian? I'm just interested. A place for crazy people. People who are certified. Huh?
There's many names.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Like crazy house.
Crazy house. Alright, there you go. That, what I like about Russia is they're not very PC about something. It's a crazy house. In America, you have to go, we're people who aren't seeing things the way that they people see them choose to congregate. In Russia, it's a crazy house, so crazy. What's the matter? So anyway, the sanitarium, sometimes they call it, use the word sanitarium. Why? I don't know, because it's for insane people. But I'm not an etymological wizard. But the Guru Maharaj would say, so in that place, I mean, the classic stereotype is people are wandering around in imagined identities. Right? Someone thinks he's Napoleon, someone thinks he's Lenin. You know? Have a drink. Napoleon, have a drink with Lenin. So the doctors, they're dealing with them within those imposed identities, assumed identities. They're humoring them to a certain degree. Maybe they call this one Lenin, that one Napoleon, whatever. But, and they're encouraging them. If they see any sign of progressive movement, they give some encouragement. Lenin, very good. Napoleon, very good. Right? But, so they're dealing with them a little bit in terms of their imagined illusory identity, but the whole idea is to bring them to a condition of sanity or normality where they'll give up the impersonation because they're pretending to be something they're not, they're pretending to be someone they're not. So it's all about just becoming adjusted mentally, internally. And so, when in answer to Sanatana Goswami's question, Kayami, Kanyamoy, Jari Tabitrai, who am I and why am I suffering from the threefold miseries of existence? Mahaprabhu's answer comes, Jive Swarupai Krishnara Nityadas. You're the eternal servant of Krishna. Right? And in forgetfulness of that, because you think, how is that the answer? It's the answer. To the degree that we don't understand that that is the answer to this question, is to the degree that we need to become adjusted. Right? Because that is the answer to the question, saying, in forgetfulness of your actual identity as a servitor of Krishna, Krishna Das, Krishna Dasi, Radha Dasi, you're assuming so many other identities, right? Identifying with the body as the self, Jalaja, Navalokani, Stavara, Lakavingshati, the whole evolutionary sequence. Ironically follows the Puranic sequence from aquatics to plants and trees to insects to birds to be this type of evolution, what ended up being Darwinian evolution or objective evolution, Guru Maharaj restyled as subjective evolution. If we like the difference between mundane Samkhya philosophy and actual Kapila Samkhya is the whether or not you add the element of soul. So if you introduce the soul element, then a subjective evolution is acceptable. That what's the driving force behind this progressive development of consciousness and self-awareness is the subject, soul, atma, atma prajnanamayo. So, three worlds we can conceive, a world of exploitation, renunciation, and dedication. Now, identifying ourselves as the doers of actions which are actually just the the karmic play. Someone, different brain scientists, they have different ideas, not only them, but psychologists too, whether you start with a tabula rasa, a clean slate, and then by your environment and up your brain, you become something. Others say, no, you're born with something. So recently someone's given the example of, as opposed to taking a picture, actually you're like a negative, waiting to be, the negative has so much information in it, and you put it in a certain environment and it develops. Something like that. So we're, the Sanskrit word is samskar. That means mental impressions that are carried from life after life after life. So if you factor in the Jalaja Navalakani shloka, it says 8,400,000 species, and here we sit as human beings, then you can imagine how many mental impressions have been acquired by the soul that are generating material bodies and an ego to identify or falsely identify the self. So, and it's all, what is it based upon? Exploiting tendency. When Manu described the karmic situation, he said, tamasa bahurupena veshtita karmahetuna. Said all these different species that we see. It was when he got to the trees, even. What is it? Tamasa bahurupena. All these different forms. It's a type of ignorance. Ignorance of self, ignorance of atma. And what is it based upon? Veshtita karmahetuna. It's all different karmic dress. It all comes under the heading of karmic dress. That's how you should see these forms. They're the outcome of exploiting tendencies. As I've mentioned many times, the body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion. That's all. Just misconceived self. Trying to establish itself as the center. This was really spelt out clearly and in its most naked form in humanism, right? Where previously there was the Isyavasyam, God-centered idea. God's the center of everything. The purpose of our existence is measured in terms of pleasing God, right? Or in Eastern thought, to the representative of God. Then what is humanism? Remove God from the center and say, you're in the center. You're, what you want, what you desire, should be the measurement of everything. Well, let's say in a more noble-sounding sense, what man wants. And then after some time, they realize they left out half the population. They decided, oh, man, and when we say man, we mean woman, too. Right? So, humankind, what human beings want and desire. This will be the standard, how we measure whether or not something is beneficial or not, or desirable. Right? The human measurement. In one sense, it's a perverted reflection of the truth, because we'll say, Krishna Jateka Kela Savartam Naralila Narababu Tahara Swaru Gopa Besh Venukar Navakisor Natabar Naralila Hoyanarup. The Aprakrita Lila of Krishna is the ultimate way to measure everything. From the subjective realm. So it's reached the pinnacle of perverted reflection when the Aprakrita Lila of Krishna becomes replaced with the image of a human being. It's like we can't help but notice when we look at certain types of Indian art, what's described as a classical Indian art, you'll see what appear to be pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but in the Mughal Empire, it's now a king and his queen, or a king and his many consorts. So they took the same imagery and put themselves in the center. Like, people like to do that. Like, you're talking about the fair, and in Thailand, they like those cutouts and things where it shows some people from another land, another world, and then they stick their face in there, and then their friends come and take a picture. It's like a very... I mean, people do it the world over, but it seems to be extra popular in Asia. So, that's what humanism is. To take pictures of divinity, or the very concept, the image we might have of God in the spiritual world, and replace the central character with ourselves. So, but that, I mean, that's, in a sense, you know, a very gross expression. As we quoted Mahaprabhu telling Sanatana Goswami, Jive Swarupai Krishna Nityadas, eternal servants of Krishna, Vyamditya Vinibeshitatshat, and forgetfulness of that, turning our back on the potential of that relationship, we're put in a fearful situation. Because when you replace God as the center with yourself, then naturally there's so many, living in the world of exploitation, there's so many anxieties that realistically we have to concern ourselves with. And interestingly, this Krishna Das, the eternal servant of Krishna, Srila Guru Maharaj, most often when he translated this word, he preferred to use the word slave, perhaps to shock somewhat, to make one more carefully reconsider what it means. Before Srila Guru Maharaj, this is always translated as servant. And when you say, you know, like we have, what is the dignity of the divine servitor, so servant, servitor, has a kind of noble ring to it. And that's good. We're not objecting to that. But most often was the case, Srila Guru Maharaj is using the word slave. Right? To take it to a more intense degree of magnitude of conception. Right? And Avadhut Maharaj likes to say, when he was visiting a South Indian queen, do you know her name? I forget, but some queen in South India connected to a particular temple where they... have the seva of the deities. So at one point he said to the queen, so you consider yourselves to be the servants of Krishna? And she said, no, that's not our conception. And he said, oh, what is it? She said, we consider ourselves to be Krishna's slaves. So she also understood that point. And if you look even in a dictionary under Das and Dasi, Dasi will say slave girl. Right. The nice rendering of that is maid servant, which is not untrue. But why is he repeatedly drawing this point? Because sometimes Guru Maharaj will mention when the British became familiar with the teachings of Saraswati Thakur and Gaudiya Math, they would criticize sometimes, saying, these people are they're promoting slavery. So Saraswati Guru Maharaj's answer to this was not to say, no, we're not promoting slavery. It was different. He said, no, you don't understand the dignity of what it means to be the slave of Krishna. Noted for his analogy, one he gave was that the Gandhi at the time announced that he needed an assistant, a servitor. What's now they dignify with like executive assistant. So anyway, interestingly, the people who applied for the position were the richest men in India, the most intelligent, the most. This wasn't a job taken by people from the lower class, aspired for by them, but rather the wealthiest men in India. They wanted to take this position. Why? Because they thought, if I get some connection with Gandhi, he's Mahatma Gandhi, he's so great, then my position will become enhanced. So Guru Maharaj gave this as an example, saying, so you can't understand the parallel to be in connection with Krishna, right? And as an assistant, a servant, a slave, that's the dignity of human achievement. So when Mahaprabhu announced this to Sanatana Goswami, it was not some sort of bad news that he was going to say, oh, well, you know, jivas and their highest aspiration, they unfortunately, they can't go beyond servitor class. It's to misunderstand what is the power of devotion. Because for whom Krishna, if one becomes the slave of Krishna, what is Krishna's response? Ahang bhakta paradino hyasvantantra eva dvija. That although I'm declared in the Bhagavatam to be Swarat, independent, I'm the supreme independent personality of Godhead. In the presence of my devotee, in the presence of devotion, I lose my independence and I come under the control of the devotee. So those who are what appears to be the slave position in relation to Krishna, Krishna is the slave of their devotion. He's the slave of those devotees. So it's the hallmark for measuring devotion, where the infinite comes under the control of the finite. And for whom will the infinite come under the control of the finite? For the finite who've wholly dedicated themselves in the sense of to oblivion, you can say. Not with the loss of self-identity, but self-sacrifice to the extreme. They bring Krishna under their control. As Guru Maharaj would say, not that we shall think of Yashoda as the finite, but she is an example of where through intense love, devotion, self-forgetfulness to the extreme, Krishna is like a plaything in her hands. And then we'll see here in this world, particularly in the arts, when art with a capital A is being considered, it will be discussed in terms of the artist making themselves absent. When they cannot detect ego in a work of art, and now we're speaking of the secular world, when they can't detect ego in a work of art, whatever it is, in a character portrayal, whatever it might be, this is where they say they ascribe genius or perfection. And they say, no trace of ego. Like we all think of actors as people with really big egos. right? Because of the name and fame and wealth that accompanies being a successful actor. But one of the gurus of acting, the ultimate guru of acting, is Stanislavski. And he has so many disciples from him, and they teach actors how to act. But one of his contemporaries was saying, really, what is the job of the actor? To serve the play. Really, he's the slave of the author, the slave of the character. He's not to impose his ego upon the character, but rather to surrender, to the, make himself egoless and allow the character to live. So that's even within the mundane realm they conceive of that. When they're discussing art, some great priest of art will say, it's approaching the divine. There's no trace of self or ego there. But that person was an instrument. Right? An instrument for some divine creation. And it's ironic that this language is similar or echoes what we find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna telling Arjuna, Nimitta Matram Bhava Savya Satyam. You can be an instrument. You can be instrumental to my will being manifest. So the perspective of a devotee, I think, was nicely expressed by Srila Gurudev, and perhaps his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, the hidden treasure of the Sweet Absolute. You can tell me if this, or it could have been Sharanagati, anyway, or it could have been in both. But Gurudev at one point says, whatever wonderful things you might find in here, that's the glory and grace of my Guru Maharaj. If you find any fault, that you can attribute to me. You know what I'm saying? The one intro, or it could be more than one. But that was his approach. Whatever, he's the publisher, he's doing all of this. And he said, so, but whatever you find here that's nourishing, that's pure and of the highest quality, that's my Guru Maharaj and his glory. And if you do find something that's less than that or faulty, that you can attribute to me. That is the perfect ego of a devotee in their approach to seva. Kanak, Kamini, Pratishtha. So we're told Pratishtha, name and fame, or in the sense credit, that will go to Guru. That's the yogyata, the song you sing every day. Yogyata vichare kichu nahi pai tomara korunasar. If you examine me, you'll see I have no qualifications, no real capacity. But Gurudev, by your grace, anything is possible. Mukham karate vacharam pangolangayate girim yakripatamahang bande sri gurundinatarinam. By the grace of Sri Guru, the impossible becomes possible. And, you know, this has to be approached with some common sense also. One of my friends used to talk about a time in Los Angeles many years ago where some devotee made some nice halava. Right? And another devotee said, oh, that was really nice halva, Prabhu. He said, I'm not the doer. Little ego assertion. So, that's a little extreme. We have to be, employ common sense. Sometimes, Srila Guru Maharaj would say, I take my stand on spiritual common sense in the midst of his vast experience, unparalleled knowledge of things. He also had this common sense approach. But still, if we look in the literature, for example, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was saying, Jagai Madhai Hoite Muise Papishta, Purise Rakita Hoite Muise Lagishta. He's saying, if you examine me, you'll see I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. I'm lower than the worm in the stool. If you hear my name, you'll lose all your pious credits. If you vibrate my name, you'll be ruined. But this Chaitanya Charitamritam that's coming from Srup Damodar to Raghunath Das Goswami and through my hand, said it is not myself who's writing this, but some higher power is descending and moving my hand and making me write these things. Sometimes he will say there, Madan Gopal, means Madan Mohan Vigraha, the deities Madan Mohan, they're causing me to write these things. So he's reached a stage where on account of intense negativity here equated with humility, he's become a superconductor of divine current. Like, I've mentioned this before, ceramics, if you freeze them to almost absolute zero, they achieve something called superconductivity. Right? At that point, they have zero resistance to current. Right? So, in this sense, Guru Maharaj says the only thing a devotee can cultivate is negativity. And that's not to be misconstrued as low self-esteem or beating oneself up. That's not what he means. But negativity equated with humility in the sense of based upon proximity to greatness. Right? That's what Kaviraj Goswami is saying. This Chaitanya Charitamritam, the activities, the lila, the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, they're so great. Out of his genuine depth and penetration into that positive plane, it brings about the intensity of this negative expression. What are parallel examples? You look at the sky, see the stars, the planets, the stars. You look through the Hubble telescope, see other galaxies, and the proximity of the magnitude of the stars, planets, galaxies. You think, oh, the Earth, it's so small in comparison, and I'm one tiny person on the Earth. Automatically, you become overwhelmed with a sense of insignificance, relative insignificance. Standing on the top of a mountain, on the shore of the ocean, there are different ways where it comes to us automatically. Humility isn't opposing a posture. So, in parallel, this idea that you can take a ceramic and bring it towards negative, absolute zero. It's around 300 degrees centigrade, negative. You understand? When you go in an airplane, you get up to around, 60, 70, 80? Minus, below zero. This is 300. And when certain ceramics reach that point, it's called more or less absolute zero, they achieve superconductivity. They can conduct supercurrent. So contrary to the idea that negativity is something to be avoided or that is not valuable, here we see both currents have their value, positive and negative. Right, in a humanistic idea, only positive current has value. Negativity is to be avoided. But in this conception, Krishna is the positive, The depth of negativity is the humility of the devotee. And to the degree that it's developed, that attracts the positive Krishna. They become infused with divine current. Krishna Shakti Bina Nahe Tara Pravartan. This is also mentioned in Charitamrita. Krishna Shakti. Without being infused with Krishna Shakti, nothing of a substantial magnitude can be achieved. So, on even a simple level, I'm recalling once when Srila Gurudev was talking about in light of the recent celebration of the Tirubhav of Srila Saraswati Thakur. He was speaking of one devotee he knew who was like the modern equivalent of a typesetter. Right? You know, typesetting. But that's where you had to pick up, what did he call it again? Doesn't anyone know? You're all dealing with graphics. What preceded digital printing?
That I don't know.
There are
plates.
Yes, but I can't. Why can't I think of the word? Like linotype. But what is it called? Letterpress. Anyway, you'd have a box like each box like A, B, C with all these different letters, and the man doing the makeup, he picks a letter, puts it here, another one, another, and it's a very painstaking process. And he's putting lead for leading. That's where all these words came from. But Gurudev was saying there was this one disciple of Saraswati Thakur, when he would be picking all the different letters to make Chaitanya Bhagwat or Chaitanya Charitamritam, all these wonderful books, to watch his hands moving with such skill and dexterity was very beautiful. And so he equated this with the last line of Guru Maharaj's poem, Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani, which says, may the divine voice of Srila Saraswati Thakur play forever within my heart. But Gurudev expressed it in this way. He said, when that man would be doing the typography, he said, so beautifully the will of Saraswati Thakur was playing in him, right, as a servitor. So that's a position that we aspire for, is that the will to serve from the Guru Varga, that we can offer ourselves in service to that plane, offer ourselves as instruments, offer our energy, our minds, our intellect as instruments for divine will, for seva, with the least amount of ego, resisting that divine current, because it's ego that resists that, and as you said initially, and wants to take the credit for anything that we do. The spiritual concept is the inverse. Right? Offer all the credit to Guru. If anything was wrong, we take responsibility for that. The material ahankar is the opposite. We're taking the credit for whatever was done, and if there's anything wrong, that's because, you know, of other people or circumstances. But when Krishna is speaking with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he's saying that actually this is already all done by me. But what I'm giving you, the opportunity, is for the credit. It will be done. But you have a choice to make. So we see in Krishna Consciousness Movement, the Krishna Consciousness Movement will expand with us or without us. This seva will be done with us or without us. So we'd rather offer ourselves in service. That's the extraordinary opportunity that is before us. And Gurudev made this point also. He said, you know, you can chant anywhere. There's so many things you can do here, there, everywhere. He said, but you don't get service everywhere. So when some service comes to us, we should be very attentive to that and very grateful. We saw that when Srila Gurudev had his heart attack in Soquel, California, and he went to the hospital and he was fully prepared, he even gave last instructions on his way there. A few days later he came out of the hospital and he thought, if I'm going to leave the world, I'd rather be in the temple than a hospital. So he came back to the temple there, to Guru Gauranga Gandharvika Giridhari Ji. And the next day, someone came forward Gurudev had a bag, a plastic, you know, a tube and a bag coming out of his side. He looked terrible in that situation. It was looking very hopeless. And then the next day, someone came forward for Harinam, and Gurudev began to smile, and he said, oh, they still want service from me. Like the upper world. He said, they still want, and like, he was totally enlivened by that. They still want something from me. Because he thought, oh, maybe they're finished. They don't want any more seva from me. Not thinking, oh, I will die and leave this. Not like that. He's saying, oh, they don't have any more service from me. That he could express some disappointment. But when that, they said, the person came forward for Harinam, he was very smiling in the midst of the bag and ailing and suffering in so many ways. He had a big smile to know that his service was still wanted, was vital, and being accepted. So that'll be the happiness for a devotee. Not taking the credit, but just being grateful that you're being asked to serve. Because no call for service, then we're in anxiety, then we're worried. Not that service is a botheration. And that, like, look, even Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said to him that he wanted him to take over the seva in the Yogpit in Mayapur of the deities. And Saraswati Thakur was reluctant to accept that responsibility. Sometimes devotees are honest and they say, oh, for various reasons they may be reluctant. But Saraswati Thakur chided him a little bit and he said, oh, you want to become a Nirvisheshvadi? That means those who believe the Lord is formless. He's asking him to take on the seva of the Vigraha, the form of the Lord. So his joke is, you want to become a Nirvisheshvadi? Like, you think that the Lord having form is trouble? Is a troublesome thing for you to serve his form? So look, even Saraswati Thakur is getting a little loving chastisement from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Then when he realized, oh, this is really the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is service that's descending to me, then he fully embraced that and actually it formed part of the foundation for Gaudiya Math. If you've ever seen the original logo, there'll be a picture of a Bhagavatam, Mridangan cartels for Kirtan, Murtis. I forget, there's like maybe, huh?
Like a star.
Yes, but what's in those different?
The printing press also.
Yeah, there's different things there, but also the deities. So this, it's like, let me say, Bhagavat Stravan, Nam Sankirtan, Bhagavat Stravan, Murti Pratishna. It's similar to what's in the Chaitanya Charitamritam. And repeatedly, we saw Srila Govinda Maharaj giving all the credit for the Russian mission to Srila Avadhut Maharaj, sometimes Bijay Raman, and then they're all deflecting and saying, no, Gurudev, it is by your grace that all of this could happen. And when sometimes Gurudev would say, there's a mysterious power moving on behalf of Avadhut Maharaj. Avadhut Maharaj would say, yes, that mysterious power is your divine order. Because Gurudev would say, but I just said you should go to Russia. And he said, yes, it's very simple what the order, it didn't have to be detailed. That's sometimes, and we can learn from that too, that you have to know. Sometimes you may be given a general order. Mahaprabhu says, Amara gyai guru hoya tarle desh jari dakotari kaho krishna upadesh. On my order, become guru and deliver the people of the land. How? Jari dagotari kaho krishna upadesh. Tell them Krishna's instruction. Talk about Krishna. Not giving 1,000 details. Just saying, you do this. Dedicate yourself to doing this and you won't go down. Everyone else will go up. So Gurudev, when Avadhut Maharaj asked, what service can I do? And you can take Guru Maharaj's conception to Russia and the Russian-speaking countries. And the thousands of details that were necessary to manifest in the course of that seva, that came by surrendering once, you know, manasa deho geho yo kichumar arpilum tu apade nanda kishu, by offering one's body, mind, words, everything, deho, Vijayaman's house. But interestingly, always Gurudev is giving the credit, the full credit, to Avadhut Maharaj. And Avadhut Maharaj is always giving the full credit to Srila Gurudev. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Ramananda, what is it saying? Sancharja, Bhakti Siddhanta Chayamritani, Bhakta Meghe. Ramananda Samvad is, Ramananda is answering Mahaprabhu's questions. But at the beginning, Kaviraj Goswami says, what is this like? The Bhakti Siddhanta Chayamritani, there's a Bhakti Siddhanta Sindhu, an ocean of Bhakti Siddhanta, and from that ocean of Bhakti Siddhanta, the cloud of Ramananda was produced. Bhakta Meghe. And then the cloud of Ramananda is raining back onto the ocean. And that's his answers to Mahaprabhu's questions. So in the end, toward the end of Ramananda Samvad, when Mahaprabhu is praising Ramananda, Ramananda is saying, I am like a musical instrument that you're playing. You're playing the tune, you're calling the tune, whatever comes out is from you. I'm the instrument, but you're playing that instrument by your divine will. So that's what we aspire to be like that. And really, the more we come in connection with the substance of Krishna consciousness, is we'll be convinced that it's not us. It's not possible. The deeper you go in Krishna consciousness, then we know it is not possible that these things come from me. They're exclusively the wealth, the gift of our Guru Varga. Because if we think, how can persons like ourselves come in connection with this? Then the conclusion is exclusively grace. In that sense, we're fortunate, because if someone were born, say, in Gauramandal or some divine, their ego, as we've heard, can get the better of them. I think they're, you know, in the Nityananda line or this line or that line, or born in the land of Mahaprabhu or Krishna or some holy place. They can think that they had something. But in this sense, we're fortunate, because we know where we appeared. So we know none of this is our property. Not any of it. It's all Sri Guru and His grace. We're being remade. This is a total makeover. Like the yajna. One thing is offered into the fire and superior substance comes out as a result. Die to live. So the act of self-sacrifice in Krishna consciousness forms the basis for a superior self to be born. Tomara Karunasar, that is exclusively the grace of Sri Guru. I was just hearing a tape where Guru Maharaj was praising some questions I was asking him. And I really, it caught me by surprise. Like, he wanted to tell me something and I went like, Hare Krishna? And he said, your necessity is bringing so many wonderful things out of me. And I couldn't understand what he was... I said, in what respect? And then he gave this incredible talk that's actually in one of the books about Sukadev Goswami and Parikit Maharaj and Varyan Eshate Prajna. Something, loka, hitam ripa, atmavit, samatakum sang. Loka hitam ripa. My dear king, the question you're asking is beneficial for everyone. And he gave this beautiful talk about that. It's based on the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But then I could understand that under his influence, we were also inspired at times to ask appropriate questions. So he was responsible for that also. The ability to question was the grace of our Guru Varga. I asked him also, and that was just thinking about the past, that myself and so many of my god brothers and god sisters, we were 19 years old, 20 years old when we came in connection with the Krishna consciousness movement. And I was asking growers, it surprised me how we could appreciate some of these things that Srila Prabhupada Swami Maharaj was saying. He's speaking Sanskrit, talking about personalities that we'd never heard of, but there was some mysterious charm or attraction there. And he said that the ability to appreciate was also extended within you. That's also the grace of Sri Guru. the ability to appreciate Krishna consciousness. So we don't want to cultivate mundane knowledge unnecessarily. When a student was being introduced to Srila Guru Maharaj and they're studying at a university in San Francisco, and Guru Maharaj said, what are you studying? Your emphasis, your major. And he said, philosophy. Guru Maharaj said, oh, diving deep into ignorance. Like, it's not enough just to be ignorant. Right? You want to get a degree in ignorance. An advanced degree in ignorance. And he said, I read in your Back to Godhead magazine, one devotee said, compared universities to mental slaughterhouses. I like that very much. Mental slaughterhouses. So here, Alpam Vidya Bhayam Kori. A little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. They'll think, oh, I know something. When Guru Maharaj went to see some, perhaps it was a doctor, and he saw him in the saffron dress, and the sannyasi, and that man said to Srila Guru Maharaj, can you tell me what you've learned in this dress, from this dress? Guru Maharaj said, yeah, I can tell you that what this has taught me is that everything you hold as high and perfect and worthy of aspiration, it's all trash. It's all garbage. That's what I learned from this. That's why Sukadeva Goswami, if you hear the second canto of the Bhagavatam, from one point of view, when you hear what he's saying in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you think, gee, that sounds like the way devotees preach in the beginning. He's condemning mundane family life in very strong language and concept. Talking about the utter futility of pursuing anything other than Krishna consciousness. Because we're told by Saraswati Thakur, sadhu means one who cuts sharply. That's one meaning of sadhu. We think, no, sadhu, they're like so sweet and nice and everything. He's saying sadhu means, if a sadhu becomes my flatterer, he becomes my enemy. Sadhu, he's cutting sharply. What? With sharp language and instruction. Right? Because we're in a diseased condition. Srila Prabhupada, Swami Maharaj called it to blowing on a boil. You know what a boil is? Amiya Sindhu? Alright. But a boil. When you get a boil, they're so painful. So when you have a boil, and if you get a boil, you can go... And whenever you blow on the boil, you get a little bit of relief. But the only way to get rid of the boil is the lancet with a knife or a razor blade. You have to lance the boil and then squeeze all the poison out. Not... That's, again, one version of Ajnana Timurandasya Ajnanandana Salakaya Chakshuramilitam Jena Tasmei Shri Guru. Surgical removal of the cataract is eye of ignorance. Fortune, I see a look on everyone's faces of like, fortunately we have laser surgery now. Guru Maharaj predicted that in the future, he said, much surgery would be done with light. Right? So we can say, this cataract, this eye of ignorance is removed by the laser light, laser-like light of divine knowledge. Hare Krishna.